Hey, it's Teresa. I'm here filling in for John today. Let's jump right in. Across the nation, Canadians are struggling to find housing they can afford. Government policies, structural shifts, inflation, consumer behavior created the perfect storm, propelling housing demand, prices, and rent to extraordinary levels. Canada's middle class is now feeling the squeeze, let alone lower-income Canadians. And it's not just city folks who can't afford a home. The crisis is going beyond urban borders and undermining the dream of home ownership everywhere. And to add fuel to the fire, the Canadian population is growing at record pace. RBC's latest report, The Great Rebuild, suggests more than half of nearly 2 million new households in the next 6 years will not be able to buy a home. That's equal to almost all the households in Atlantic Canada. We need bold action to close the gap between supply and demand. And we need it before things get worse. Solutions are going to require more and better collaboration between key stakeholders, policymakers, urban planners, developers, construction companies, financial institutions, and more. We also need to think about the type of housing required, which leads us to today's discussion on prefabricated and modular construction. Prefab homes have been around for years, but advancements in technology innovation and design have made them more appealing. They also offer a promising solution to help address home prices and rent relief. So, how can we quickly increase housing stock while considering the building sector's impact on climate? At a time when construction capacity is limited, what does prefab mean for labor and material costs? And what can we do to prioritize building innovation to help solve one of our most pressing challenges? This is Disruptors, an RBC podcast. I'm Trin Teresa Doe. When you hear the term modular, which is a form of prefab, you may think Lego, or perhaps furniture that you're able to move and assemble in different ways to suit your living space. Prefab and modular homes are constructed in a controlled environment, ranging from simple wall panels all the way to single-family homes and multi-story buildings. The buildings are then transported and assembled on-site, promising faster and more cost-effective alternatives to traditional construction methods. Our first guest is Craig Mitchell, principal at Black Box Offsite Solutions and partner at 720 Modular. Craig's worked in modular construction for more than two decades and is now a consultant leading building owners, architects, and contractors through the process to effectively execute modular construction projects. Craig, welcome to Disruptors.
Hey, nice to meet you today.
So you have a long history of working in modular construction. What's changed since your early days of working in this space?
Yeah, it's actually been quite a change during the course of my career. You know, when I first got into this industry, the need for modular construction really resonated in the industrial sector here in Canada. So think of industrial type trailers or working in the oil sands. And I would say that was primarily the use of modular construction in this country for really up until the last decade or so. I think what we've seen in the last little bit is the use of modular construction in a way that the rest of the world is using it, and that's permanent modular facilities. People are seeing it as an alternative form of construction that solves some of the issues that we have currently going on in the construction industry. Challenges with labor and skilled labor force, people are looking for alternates now to solve some of the headaches that have really arisen in the traditional construction sector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a really strong case now to scale prefab and modular, and especially in light of the housing affordability crisis. But there are so many, I think, challenges still that must be addressed in order to scale and unlock this opportunity. So can you share with us just some of those biggest challenges that you're seeing now?
Yeah, I would say the challenges that we're seeing right now is that the construction industry has been around for 100 plus years. The process is well ingrained. And I think those in the industry have trouble adopting this new form of construction. And so that needs to change. And I would say that it's how to use it and how to enable this scale and this growth, I think, is one of the challenges. And so that's the development sector. The public sector is a big advocate of modular construction in this country. And we've seen it with a lot of provincial governments and municipal governments adopting modular construction. The federal government's coming out with an industrialized housing strategy. So there's this wave of interest and growth in it. However, the public sector has older processes in terms of how they procure products. And because modular construction is different, the procurement practices in the public sector don't lend themselves to the growth of modular construction or offsite construction in this country. And so we really need to change public sector procurement practices toward more collaborative contracting methods and no longer design, bid, build. That doesn't work with modular construction.
And for our listeners, what is design, bid, build?
Yeah, it's where an owner, for example, gets together with an architect and they design a building and they bring in the consultants. And at the end of the design process, what they do is they formulate a budget for the project. They send it out to bid to contractors. And guess what happens? A lot of times in this environment, the project is over budget. And then you have to restart the wheel again in the design process and retweak the design to come in under that budget. Modular construction requires an integrated approach. You must have the owner at the table. The design consultants must be at the table. But now you also need a contractor at the table. You need the modular manufacturer at the table. You need the person who's handling logistics and all the erection of the building at the table. You may even want the local municipality and the authority having jurisdiction at the table during the design process. And all of that during that pre-construction phase, before you actually even get in the ground, is where a project is won or lost.
So it sounds like there are a lot of entrenched processes and methods that have been around for ages that need to be changed. So what have you seen work in terms of shaking things up, or what could work in terms of shaking things up and making those changes happen?
Yeah, I would say even in the public sector right now in municipalities, I know that the development and construction industry has long cried out that we need to reduce red tape when it comes to permitting and building permits. And I would echo that. I think there needs to be even a separate stream for permitting for offsite construction methodologies. Because in order for modular construction to thrive and take hold, we have to understand what the permitting timelines are. Otherwise, all the advantages of modular construction will go by the wayside if we don't have visibility about how long permitting takes. The other part of it too is for government to start enabling prefabrication, we really need good data and good examples and good case studies of successful projects. And we really haven't seen that. You know, one of the things that I really think it would be important is for any publicly funded project that there must be a lessons learned. There must be data directed capture during the course of the project. That's the only way industry is going to get certainty around this method of construction.
Yeah, that's what I hear too. And speaking with some of our clients and stakeholders across the building sector, is there's a lack of knowledge sharing, and they would love to learn more about what the best practices are. You work across the country, you've worked in many different jurisdictions. Can you share with us which ones are furthest along when it comes to prefab, and what do they do differently that makes it successful there?
Yeah, so I'm in Vancouver, and a lot of my experience and history in modular construction has been largely on the West Coast. And the provincial housing authority here in BC, BC Housing, has been a really great adopter of modular construction over the last 10 plus years, probably even longer than that. But I would say, you know, the jurisdictions that have done well in Canada have been the ones that have accelerated timelines when it comes to permitting. They have an entity that promotes the use of modular construction within public housing. And they also have policies that promote the use in their language when they go and procure modular construction. I recently was working on a project for even just a homeless shelter, and we were reutilizing some existing modular structures that we were transporting from northern Alberta to set up in this very smaller communities in Ontario. And perfect example was we were able to get a building permit turned around in 4 days.
Wow.
And we'll be open in less than 35 days with this one particular facility. And so it made me realize that where there's the political will in this country to enable that to happen, that's what we need on a larger scale, that we need people realizing that we are actually in a housing crisis and that we need to get people in the political arena to start approving these projects faster. So I think it can be done. It's political will at the end of the day.
One thing that is top of mind for us as we think through the housing crisis is also not forgetting that we have a climate crisis. From your perspective, how does prefab modular contribute to the reduction of emissions when it comes to building homes?
Yeah, that's a really important point, and I feel really strongly about delivering sustainable solutions. From a carbon emission standpoint, it's well documented that if we can move things into a factory or industrialized housing environment, we reduce the carbon emissions because everything is centralized in one location, gets built in one location, and then delivering a finished product that is of higher quality to a job site, whether that's in pieces or in volumetric components, there's fewer carbon emissions as a result. And so we really need to start thinking about industrialized housing as a solution in terms of how we build sustainable housing in this country.
How do you see prefab growing in Canada over the next 10 years?
So, you know, Canada, we've got this huge landmass with population centers that are very regional in nature. And I think we need to look at that and say, this is really how we need to grow our sector, because the East Coast will have different demands than Ontario, than the West Coast. And we really need to start looking at pattern plans that are more regional in nature and developing those individual areas within this country. So I think there's that opportunity. I also mentioned too, I think we really need to start doing a better job of acquiring data on successful projects and using those lessons learned to develop this sector and getting it further along that the private sector will eventually start adopting modular construction. That's what's happened in other countries around the world. I suspect that that's what's going to happen here, but we need good examples first from the public sector.
So regionalism, data, and then having the public sector mitigate the risks so that private sector could take this on. I think those are really excellent calls to action. Thank you so much for your insights, and thank you for joining us on Disruptors.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks again, Teresa.
Our next guest is Michelle Tung, CEO at Homed, a green modular building company that focuses on below market and affordable housing, including emergency shelters. Michelle also sits on the board of directors at the First Nations Housing and Infrastructure Council in Vancouver and volunteers on the Government Affairs Committee at the Modular Building Institute. Michelle, welcome to Disruptors.
It's very nice to be here. Thank you very much, Teresa.
So we're talking today about prefab as a solution to the housing affordability crisis. Can you tell us how and why does prefab modular solve for affordability and homelessness?
So prefab and modular together is a very effective way of getting homes out quickly to people who need them. Because if we look at how we manufacture, you can bring in efficiencies, we can optimize savings and costs, we can reach economies of scales. When we're working in factory, for example, we're working in ideal conditions. So we actually have the opportunity to reduce worker accidents, increase worker safety. And because we have a centralized way of manufacturing, we can optimize transportation as well as procurement of resources and supplies. Mm-hmm. And we're also decreasing waste.
Why did you choose to start a modular housing company?
Well, I started Homed with two other people. One is a architect who is a dear friend of mine. He has over 20 years of experience building skyscrapers around the world. And what he was seeing was that there is a shift from building in the traditional way to building modular. So he created this box pod design, and we've taken that here in Vancouver and offered a different solution to traditional stick frame or steel manufacturing. So that was one of the major reasons why we started Homed. And the other one was we started the company at the height of COVID. And it was, for me, it was really a time of self-reflection as a mother, you know, thinking about future generations. And so I really wanted to do something that would have social purpose, social impact, seeing that there was this increasing disparity with the have and have nots, people with homes and people that could not afford to live in homes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. An incredible thing about modular construction is the scale and the speed at which you're able to build, especially now with the housing crisis and so many people who are unhoused across the country. How much does it cost to build a modular home, one of your box pod designs, perhaps, compared to a traditional build?
That's a very interesting question because we often get that question, like, is modular a cheaper way of building than traditional construction? And the answer is, if we look at the cost of construction versus a life cycle cost analysis, right? Modular construction should be cheaper. But one thing that is always consistent with modular is that when you build a modular project, it will always be faster. You'll be saving about 20 to 50% time in construction. When you centralize manufacturing, you can optimize certain elements like the procurement of materials, and then you can also have increased quality of the product. So when we're looking at the cost over the lifetime, you are saving money on a modular product.
And how long would it take to build a modular home compared to a traditional home?
If we were to take a project of 30 units, a typical project would be about 26 months if we were to do it by traditional stick frame. If we were to do it with modular, it would take 9 months. So you're saving, an incredible amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's incredible time savings and cost savings if you think about just things like insurance cost to maintain a construction site. By shortening that time frame, you are saving so much. Homed offers standardized modules that can be reused, relocated, and remodeled. What types of housing is modular best suited for?
Modular is best suited for structures that are repeatable, unit sizes that can be put onto a truck, as an example. So when we look at the types of uses of which modular is best for, it is best for affordable housing, such as public housing, retirement communities. It's good for student housing, and it's great for hotels or even hostels.
Can you tell us about some of these communities that you work with?
So Homed has been working with Luminative Housing Society in Vancouver. They have over 30 years of experience. They understand the market. And so when they saw what we were doing, offering a different solution, an alternative solution to, you know, traditional stick frame or steel, we worked with them in understanding where the gaps were in the market and what we could provide. So the box pod that we have created with Luma has been very much a collaborative effort to create something that is very, you know, useful here in Canada, not only in the urban markets, but also in rural and remote communities.
That's awesome. And that's a good segue to my next question, Michelle, which is on the climate side and the sustainability side. You know, it's so tempting these days to focus on the urgency of building more homes, building more affordable homes above all other crises, including climate. But we know that it's so crucial to build homes that are not only future-proofed against climate disasters, but also don't contribute to greater emissions. So I'm hoping you can perhaps expand more on how prefab is or can be more climate-friendly than conventional methods.
Right now, if we look at how modular is built in Canada, it's basically taking stick frame into a factory, right? So we haven't optimized the opportunity to really get to where we should be with climate inefficiencies with modular. But once we get to that state where we're using higher quality materials, panelized assembly, as an example, then we can get to homes that are airtight, energy efficient. And then that's when we're going to really see the full optimization of how modular can really impact climate action.
If you look out at the landscape of construction today and housing today, just based on your experience, what do you see are the greatest opportunities for home builders, prefab or otherwise, to reduce emissions?
There's a lot of things that we can do to reduce emissions. Looking at our design, even the placement of where we put our homes, retrofitting with climate change, it's getting hotter. So there are ways of not really using air conditioning, but we could even use just passive cooling techniques, such as habitat screens, roller shutter systems that, you know, reflect the UV rays. There's different ways of building to certain standards and certifications like LEED and BREEAM. And then there's ways of optimizing the types of mechanical equipment that we have at home, our HVAC systems, our lighting, our appliances, and also just having better envelope performance, looking at the insulations, making sure that the homes are airtight, that the windows are of higher quality.
What do you think it would take to unlock more modular construction in Canada?
It requires a lot of education. People are still learning about modular. I know that there is push by government to have like a playbook for municipalities to play by to increase modular. But I think we need much more than that. I think that there needs to be more incentive programs. For example, I can't see us fulfilling our goals to 5.8 million homes by 2030 if we do not have modular. So we need to incentivize developers to think modular. You need to put people who understand manufacturing into the factories to understand elements like just-in-time, TQM, lean manufacturing and all these elements. So there needs to be this collaboration and this open-mindedness to embrace that. And even for CMHC funds, if we look at how the financing is done, it's set up for traditional construction. What we need is understanding that when you're building in modular, a lot of the capital financing is required upfront.
Wow, those are really good calls to action. Thank you so much for being on Disruptors, Michelle.
Thank you very much, Teresa.
Our final guest, Mark Stevenson, is the founder and president of Cube Building Systems, a building science and technology company. Cube creates modular mid to high-rise buildings using techniques and processes inspired by automotive and aircraft engineering. Mark, welcome to Disruptors.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So I'm hoping to get into the context for this conversation, prefab, modular. It's been around for decades, but only really now is it starting to be seen as a viable fix to the housing crisis. Why now, Mark?
Well, I think necessity. Presently, we're seeing extreme amounts of demand for housing solutions. The demand is so great, it's not possible to address with conventional means, and we need to look sort of beyond conventional construction to prefab and modularization and other modern forms of construction. We don't believe prefab is the fix, so to speak, but simply a contribution towards solving the problem. It has developed a lot, particularly in the last decade. Previously, it was sort of a one-size-fits-all solution that was typically applied in limited capacity or to lesser forms of construction. And I think because of that, it had a little bit of a stigma. But now I feel there's a recognition that it actually has a much more broad-reaching application. Mm-hmm. It can be used in remarkable ways. You know, we've been at this a long time. So to see the industry sort of coming to us is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example of what the different stages are that Cube uses to construct a building versus like a traditional construction method?
I think that's actually an important distinction to make, is that we don't look at it as phases or stages, but we look at it as one stage and one process. And I think that's fundamentally the mind shift that drives how we think. You know, one of the challenges with the construction sector is that independent actors operate in very siloed environments, and it typically pits one party against the other. It's all about shifting risk down the value chain, and it's very challenging. We take much more of a broad approach where having developed an integrated building system, which in and of itself is a productized approach, we're able to orient the value chain and all of the actors within it in more of a circular format, oriented around the product itself and around continuous improvement of the product, of its transportation, of its installation, of its commissioning, and ultimately building operations. It's a completely different approach where we start sort of with the end user, the occupant in mind. What type of building are we looking to deliver? And we design the building literally with the building system. And that encompasses everything from massing of the building, unit mixes, features, accessories, components. It's a very, as I say, holistic, full spectrum approach.
So what does that mean? Traditionally, you might bring in architects, engineers, multiple teams, and then after each stage, you hand off the design over to the blueprint, over to so and forth. But here, are you describing that Cube does all of that in-house? It's vertically integrated?
It is in a sense, but it does require work with partners. It's not in isolation. So for example, when we design energy systems and HVAC systems and building facade and insulation systems, all of that design and engineering is already done and embedded in our product. And it's a configurable system. And so in working with partners, engineers, and architects on specific project applications, we're able to make adjustments to configure, to reconfigure certain elements of the system to fulfill the project needs. But the bulk of the engineering, so to speak, from the ground up is embedded within the product itself. So we don't displace other actors in sort of the construction value chain, but we shift the order of events and where certain elements of project design, project execution take place.
Could you walk me through the process that Cube goes through to
construct a building, starting from the vision and design all the way through to the construction of the actual building?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I can speak about the first step is sort of looking at what is a specific use case for the project. So what type of building are we going to create? Who's going to live in that building? Who are the end occupants? We start to look at optimization of density, the economics behind it. I mean, whether it's market-based rental or affordable market rental. We develop the massing, we work out the unit mix, and we essentially understand it that early in the project, what it's going to take to manufacture the components of the project, what it's going to take to transport the project, what it's going to take to install the project, and ultimately commission it and turn it into an operating building.
What challenges were Cube looking to solve with this building system?
Well, when we started the company, we did a study and we saw an opportunity for a productized solution in the construction sector. And that's really the sort of founding premise that drove us to develop the system. You know, we immediately adopted a viewpoint that we're really more about building science and technology than we are about sort of construction and prefabrication. Those are just elements of the product that we sought to produce. And we recognized that we wanted to develop the system or manufacture the system, you know, much more analogous to the methods that you see in automotive manufacturing or aircraft manufacturing. And so we borrow elements from conventional construction and conventional materials, but we also looked outside the industry to other material types, other methods of installation. We didn't want it to be a built product. We didn't want it to be a constructed product. We wanted it to be truly a manufactured product. It's assembled, it's installed. We prefer those types of words because it really gives you the vision of the direction that we're going.
Construction, as I'm sure you're aware, is an industry notoriously stuck in the status quo. How we build today is largely the same as how we've been building for generations. And many builders I've spoken with aren't even at the stage of prefab, let alone thinking about industrialized construction and a whole integrated system like Cube is working on. What would it take for builders to be able to replicate such systems or even get there?
Well, I think it's, if you look at the market opportunity right now, there's an immense supply gap in the housing market, for example. The conventional industry cannot fulfill demand. And I think that's where the innovation needs to come. We realized early on that we were going to be faced with the requirement to have to demonstrate, to develop the system, to test the system, to build projects using the system because of that typical resistance or the status quo doesn't want to try it out. They want to wait for the risk to be mitigated, for it to be more broadly acceptable. And so I think the act of demonstrating those solutions, exhibiting that thought leadership and showing the product in action is what will ultimately drive market acceptance, and hopefully others will join the bandwagon and help do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, that is a great call to action. And Mark, thank you so much for being on Disruptors.
Thank you, Teresa. I appreciate it.
Today, you heard from three prefab experts and disruptors. They are using technology to rethink construction and get homes built faster, better, and at scale. But prefab still needs more government and private sector support. As you heard, the industry will need demonstrable solutions and clear successes to win over the hearts and minds of Canadians. Our latest housing report, The Great Rebuild, dives into this and six other recommendations to take on the supply and affordability challenge. To check it out, visit rbc.com/thegreatrebuild. This is Canada's opportunity to build better for a growing population. Can we make it happen? I'm Trin Teresa Doe, and this is Disruptors, an RBC podcast. Until next time.
Disruptors, an RBC podcast, is created by the RBC Thought Leadership Group and does not constitute a recommendation for any organization, product, or service. For more Disruptors content, visit rbc.com/disruptors and leave us a 5-star rating if you like our show.